Welcome to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We'll be talking about the Berner Botanical Gardens today with our horticulturist in charge there, David Wanninger. He's going to talk about the gardens and their history and take your gardening questions. So, what do you like about the Berner Gardens? Have you been there? Do you have some questions about the gardens? Do you have questions about perennials? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. David, with us by phone today. David Wanninger, thank you for joining us.
Good day, Larry. Nice to be here. I've listened for years, and it's nice to finally be on this side.
Yeah, it's great to have you as a guest. And, you know, Milwaukee County has one of the great, I think, programs anywhere on parks and so forth. And the Berner Botanical Gardens is part of that, and it's celebrating 80 years. And the history of it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, this place is an absolute jewel. It originally started in the 30s. Mr. Charles Whitnell was the first guy who got the envision to try to get an emerald, as he put it, an emerald necklace surrounding Milwaukee County. And in the teens and then in the 20s, they made plans and they acquired land out here in the Hales Corners area, southwest quadrant of Milwaukee County, and they started both the park, Whitnell Park, and the Botanic Gardens. And it happened to be during the Depression, so the CCC, with Civilian Conservation Corps, built a camp here and hired, oh gosh, hundreds of young kids or young men, 16 to 20 years old, paid them $30 a week. They had to send most of that money home to mom and dad, and they, by hand, with shovels and picks, constructed a lot of the topography here at the gardens, did a lot of stonework. We had the Works Projects Administration. It was another Depression era program. Had skilled artisans build beautiful stone walls and beautiful buildings, original sculpture. You go into the garden house at the original headquarters, and it was built in the 30s, and there's wrought iron work by Cyril Kalmnick in there, which is Cyril Kalmnick is a world famous ironwright. The beautiful gates that they used to have at the domes, for instance, were done there. And we've got beautiful wrought iron in there, beautiful carved animal heads. My favorite is probably the bat in the garden house. Those were done by Carl Kalich, local artisans with actual national renown. And so this place is just a jewel, Larry.
It is indeed.
I'm so proud to be working.
Oh, man, I love the place. Describe your acreage and how it's set up. You've got, like, kind of three different areas, I think you might say.
Well, first you start with Whitnell Park, which is about 1,000 acres and has several miles driving lanes, you know. And so, and out in there, we actually have a 500-tree crabapple collection. We've got a nut tree collection, maple collection. But then as you get in closer to the actual botanical gardens themselves, they cover about 30 acres. There's about 9 individual garden areas. I believe 7 were original to the 30s. We've added other areas as time has gone on. So there's probably about 6 or 7 acres that are the original gardens that are very intensively gardened.
Yeah, they're really lovely to see. What are your favorite areas?
My gosh, because I'm such a peony nut, I can hardly wait for the tree peonies and the shrub mall to bloom each spring.
Yeah.
We've got a really unusual collection. It's one of the great collections of tree peonies in the country. People don't think about, peonies as being woody plants, but there is a kind of peony called tree peony. They're not real common. But in 1940, we got a collection of 46 plants, and it was from C.E. Hammersley, and 3 of those are still exist in the garden. And every year, early May, it could hardly wait for, maybe Empress of Serenity to open up. You wait for the first one to open. You can hardly wait for that moment. So that's one I really love, the Tree Peony Collection. I really like the Rock Garden. That is right off the Shrub Mall. It was built in the 30s by that CCC labor, hand labor. Tens of thousands of pounds of rocks made to make a little grotto area. And all sorts of cute and unusual little spring ephemerals coming up there, some natives. But just the beauty of the Rock Garden itself and the solitude you feel in there. Just a fabulous little.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And you're also, Berner is also known for the roses. It's roses as well, if I'm
Our rose collection, again, is very well known, very famous. Traditionally, we had a lot of hybrid teas and hybrid perpetuals and floribundas. As a matter of fact, our gardens are named after, of course, Alfred Berner, but his brother was known as Papa Floribunda. It was a great rose breeder, so that was one of our original pipelines of great roses. The rose garden started in the 40s. You know, Joe, just in the last few years, though, we look at how people appreciate roses and these traditional rose gardens that have to be sprayed every 10 days and lots of, you have to use insecticides and fungicides. That's not the way gardening is going these days. So in the past 5 years, we've done a really sort of major overhaul of the garden area. We've probably replaced up to 90% of our original varieties with new, more sustainable varieties. And we try to refer to the gardens now, we're trying to refer to rose gardens as not necessarily organic, but low impact using organic principles. Mm-hmm. It's not like we can't get an insecticide out if we have a specific problem, rose midge, for instance. But in general, we use organic fertilizers. We try to plant roses that don't need winter protection, don't need extra fungicides, don't need extra insecticides. And we've been very, very successful. Mm-hmm. Of course, we got to keep to our roots, and we still have some of our original plantings that date back to the 40s, and we're not giving up on those.
No, I would hope not.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing is there's been such a revolution in rose breeding, led by Will Radler, who is the former director here in the garden, still lives by and is still a great friend of the gardens. We consulted extensively with him as we did our rose garden overhaul. David Slezak, professor up at help me out here. Northern Wisconsin, River Falls.
River Falls, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a wonderful rose breeder, and we're trialing some of his new roses as we're trialing some of Will Radler's roses. So we have a local connection. We have great plant breeders in Wisconsin, and we try to support them, and they certainly support us.
Our guest today on Garden Talk is David Wanninger, who is the horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. Questions for him about the gardens, or maybe you've got a flower question of your own, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Dave, we had an email from Julie in Langlade County, and I don't know if you guys have experienced jumping worms yet. Hopefully not in the garden. But she was wondering if she should be concerned about buying plants from big box stores, worrying that there may be jumping worms, you know, in the things she buys.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a well-placed concern. Although she should keep in mind that jumping worms, they're present, and the way they mostly get spread is through eggs in native soil. So the most common way for jumping worms to come into a garden is through dirt on shoes, dirt on tools, and most specifically, plants that have been planted in real soil. Typically, the plants you buy at a box store are grown in potting mixes. Non-soil potting mixes. Typically, I don't see much chance for transfer of jumping worms, you know, buying plants from a reputable plant seller, unless, of course, this is something that somebody has dug and divided and growing in natural soil. So for most cases, it's the soil. It's the soil that has worm eggs in it that really is the problem. Now, we do have jumping worms here in the gardens, and sorry to tell everybody, but I think jumping worms, at least some gardens, are here to stay in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Because we transfer some plants with soil, I know jumping worms are first noticed, I believe, at Ware. come on, Ware Nature Center, just about a half mile away from us, also in Whitnall Park. And we have found them in certain localities here in the gardens, and we try not to transfer that soil around. Once you have them, you have them, though.
And yeah.
We'll live with them. There's been a pest, you know, the pest of the millennia every 3 or 5 years, it seems, and we always have to live with them.
Yeah. Well, Patricia in Madison has a question for you. So let's go to Patricia. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and guest. Your guest has already mentioned Bill Radler, and I think it has to be mentioned to give him credit for developing the knockout roses, which are really low maintenance.
And we've got a bunch of the knockout series in our gardens. The knockout rose is the single biggest rose breakthrough in breeding, I think, in my career at least. And again, it's a fabulous rose, and the whole series is pretty darn good.
What makes it so amazing?
First off, good flower color. Everybody likes red or that really hot pink red.
Yeah.
But also the disease resistance more than anything, the vigor, and it's pretty much an ever-blooming rose. So it's got the whole package. I will say that in a tough year, you can't always predict that I'm coming back. That's, I think, the one possible downfall. I've known of knockout roses that have been in the ground for 15 years doing fine, but I have also had to replace a couple on my own that just decided to die some years. But in general, it's plenty hardy for around here.
Patricia, thank you. Let's go to Meg in Oconomowoc next. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Larry. My question is, who developed the original master plan for the Berner Botanical Gardens? Was it Mr. Berner, or was there a landscape architect involved?
Yeah, I don't know about an actual written master plan. I'd like to think there was one. How it worked, though, Charles Whitnall was the first director of parks, and I'm guessing he was the one who actually hired Alfred Berner. Alfred Berner was a 28-year-old landscape architect, and he got hired in about 1926. And I believe that what happened is Charles Whitnall, because Alfred Berner was a landscape architect, he actually entrusted Alfred Berner with designing the gardens and laying out the gardens. So that's where the original plan came from. I don't know how the original, the master plan looked or if it actually existed, but that's the genesis of the garden.
But Berner was the guy.
Yes, Alfred Berner was the guy who did the design work. And then, actually, even during the construction of the gardens, a man named Charles Voigt came on. It was actually sort of a crew leader out here, worked a lot with those CCC workers. And after Berner died young in 1955, but he worked hand-in-hand, especially after Alfred Berner's time, he worked hand-in-hand with John Voigt, who was, along with Will Radler, two of our greatest garden directors of the gardens out here. And he was there for many years, several decades, and John Voigt was the guy I think who really took that the gardens from the Berner era and took us into the more modern era. He was the impetus behind getting the trial garden going in the 50s, and we're the only municipal, by the way, the only municipal trial garden in the country. It's sort of interesting, and we're making it work really well.
Meg, thank you so much. Diane in Mishicot, we go to you next. Hi, Diane.
Hi there, Larry and your guest. I wondered when the best time is to trim a burning bush.
Okay. You can shear them during the growing season if you wish to. Generally speaking, you do not want to prune any woody plant, deciduous or conifer or evergreen. After maybe the 4th of July, it's best not to. Any time past midsummer in particular to fall, to early fall, if you trim then, you get the force the plant to get another spurt of growth. Just the time frame when it's going to start going to bed for the winter. So don't prune midsummer until the leaves change color. Once the leaves change color, you know the plant's going dormant. Great time to prune. So the single best time to prune it is during the dormant season when it does not have leaves.
There you go, Diane. Thank you so much for calling. Our guest today, David Wanninger, horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Dave Potratz, our engineer. For Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at perennials and other kinds of plants today as we talk with David Wanninger. Dave is horticulturist at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. Always great to be able to talk about our botanical gardens that we have here in the state. Berner is one of the gems, and so fun talking with him about the gardens. And, of course, he can answer your gardening questions as well as you join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Before we go back to the phones, Dave, that China lights display has really brought people to the gardens, I hear. Talk about that event, and will it be back next year?
Oh, my goodness. It has been remarkably successful. This was our third year, this last year, and China Lights is a Chinese lantern show that erects, 40 or 50 different little areas, maybe as many as 200 individual pieces. Some of these pieces being 150 feet long or four stories tall, lit with thousands and thousands of LED lights, covered with beautiful colored fabrics. So it's quite a display, and it's been the last 3 years, pretty much through the month of October. It is coming back, folks, so if you didn't get a chance to see it either the last 3 years, or if you've been a loyal attendee the last 3 years, get ready for number four. It's so wonderful. We get 100,000 extra people every year to experience the gardens. And I'll talk to people, and they say, geez, I didn't know this place was even here. And so it's just so nice to have, to get more people exposed to the gardens themselves. Now, of course, I like to go visit the garden and look at the flowers. Sometimes, the Chinese, rather than the Chinese displays, but they're all wonderful. It is a little bit of a challenge when you have 100,000 more people coming to the gardens. We do have to, that's 100,000 more pieces of foot traffic. So there's some mitigation involved, but we're cleaning up good. And I'm looking forward to see what the new displays are going to be for next year at China Lights.
We will take some more calls here. Let's go to Suzanne in Stoughton. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. And I love your show, and also I love the work that you've done with the artists. And I just tuned in, and I heard the last question, so forgive me if it's repetition. But you talked about not pruning during the season until fall. Is it okay to prune in early spring? I have some viburnums that are a little out of control, some bridal wreaths, some unidentified shrubs that I would like to cut back. Is it okay to do that sort of thing prior to the growing season in early spring?
It's a great time to prune those kind of plants. Two things to maybe keep in mind for early spring pruning. There are some plants, trees in particular, maples and birches are two that come to mind, that will throw quite a bit of sap at from pruning wounds. This really doesn't hurt the plant very much, but some people prefer not to prune something like a maple or a birch at that time frame. But it's the other thing you have to at least consider is, you mentioned bridal wreath spirea. That is a particular kind of spirea that sets its flowers on the wood from last year. So if you shear it back, you'll be shearing out your flowers from next year. That would be on most of your spring flowering shrubs. That's a consideration. Things like lilacs, for instance. If you prune in the spring, you might be pruning out some of your flower buds. But for the health of the plant, it's a great time to prune.
There you go, Suzanne. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And, well, let's take another call. Margaret in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I wanted to know, what do you do to start a prairie field in your front yard? And I guess I would have to ask the city that, too. I don't know how they feel about it.
Fort Atkinson. Okay. Do you, Dave, do you have experience with that?
I have no experience actually establishing a prairie in my front yard. However, I will say that I have not mowed any grass in my yard for, oh gosh, 7 or 8 years now. It's all covered with other kinds of plants, not turf. But for establishing a prairie, the way I understand it, the single hardest part is getting rid of all the old vegetation, especially perennial vegetation. That would be things like grasses and thistle and things that can come up underneath the prairie, because once you get those prairie seeds down, those plants down, you're not going to be putting down, you know, you're not going to be using herbicides much, and it's tough to, when something's already established, to get that prairie established. I think that's the, from the viewpoint of establishment of a prairie, I think getting rid of all your old stuff first. And I know some municipalities have rules on the board about how, you know, how tall the plants can, for instance, can't be in front of your house. So I certainly think you better, you should check with your municipality on that. But from what I've heard about establishing prairies, the hard part is getting the ground nice and clean so you can get seed and or plants established.
And you, Margaret, you could go online to a number of nurseries. Prairie Nursery would be a good place to go, I know for sure, because they have a lot of information right on their website about establishing a nursery, a prairie, I'm sorry. And so if you just type in prairie nursery here in Wisconsin, you're going to get a website that's going to help you out a lot, too. And they also sell plants and so forth and seeds that you could use, too. So there you go. Thank you, Margaret. Appreciate the call.
Funny you should say that, Larry, because I think that's where I learned my stuff about establishing and getting rid of the things. Most of what I know about prairies, I learned from the Prairie Nursery website.
There you go. Margaret, thanks. Let's go to Dwayne in Wausau. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi. You've answered some of my questions about, I have lilacs and I have spireas, and I was going to rejuvenate my spireas this spring. They looked a little bad. And then my lilacs are really tall, like real high. Can you just shear off after they bloom, like shear off 3 or 4 feet up toward the top?
That's not the best idea.
Yeah, you can, but then you end up with these stubby-looking plants. If you could go back, lilacs are a little tricky because they don't, the branching is not really, but if you can go back to branch crotches and take your pruning cuts out there, a lot of times you can reduce the size of something like a lilac right after it flowers. But you'd have to be, like I say, just not lopping it back and leaving stubs does not work very well. Sometimes I've seen people had good luck when they want to rejuvenate lilacs and they're really, really too big, way too big, cutting them down all the way to the ground, maybe 6 inches, leaving just stumps there, and then give yourself a couple years and I prune the new shoots coming up to thin them out as they come up. But you can reestablish a lilac in just a couple years by cutting it down hard. It's sort of hard when you got a 10, 12-footer to get it down back to 8 foot looking good.
Yeah, usually they say take, if I'm not mistaken, take like the tallest third or so, you know, the ones, the biggest ones around, because they don't flower as well anyway.
Nope.
And if you do that every 3 year, you know, every year you take a top,
yeah,
take that biggest third, in 3 years you've got a pretty nice looking lilac bush again.
Yeah, but if it's something that hasn't been treated for a while, you do have to, yeah, you sort of start in slow and take a third out. One point I made about the lilacs is they don't always form up real good, so that's one reason I mentioned that part about rejuvenation instead of taking them down. But taking, like you said, up to a third of the wood per year will allow you to get it down, especially if you do your pruning at crotches, at where branches come off.
Exactly right. And you're going to be really pleased with the blooms that you get once you've done that, Dwayne. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Just one more thing for Dwayne. He mentioned his spireas. I talked about bridally spirea, talking about how you might be pruning off your flowers. Most of the common summer flowering spireas, the plants that we think of as a spireas, those little gumdrop-shaped, you know, shrubs with the pink, red or white flowers, those flower on new wood, and one of the best ways to grow those is just cut them down to the ground every year, and they come back tight and even and beautiful.
Yeah, very good points. Thank you again, Dwayne, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And on to Jeremy in Waterford next. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I have a spot. I live along the Fox River, and I live up on a hill, and I have an apple tree that was attacked by a beaver this past year that I'm looking to replace. So I'm looking to see if you have any interesting ideas for a tree I can watch grow for the next 20 years that won't get too tall to obstruct the view.
So you want, and do you want an apple tree to replace, or do you want to, you don't care?
I don't care, but I'm definitely open to a new apple tree. But, you know, there is a lot of apples that require a lot of maintenance. You guys seem like you could have some interesting ideas.
Okay. Dave, what do you think?
Well, you said apple. I think one of the best adapted ornamental trees to Wisconsin is the crab apple, flowering crab apples. And there's a lot of newer varieties that don't give us the problems of apple scab like we used to see decades ago. And also, there's a lot of these apple varieties out there that tend to hang on to their fruits, so you don't have, so it doesn't smell like a vinegar factory in your backyard. You got the yellow jackets all over the place feasting on the fallen fruit every fall. Red Splendor is just one that comes to mind, but there's a lot of really good flowering crabs out there, and they differ in shape and overall height and size. I think you could do a lot worse than a flowering crab apple.
And Red Splendor doesn't get extremely tall either, does it?
No, I'm thinking about 20. Most of those go about 20 foot. Event.
Yeah.
I think that's the height I heard mentioned earlier. And there's many, many good varieties. Red Jewel, actually, I probably like even better. There's so many good ones out there. But, again, go to your local garden center, and they can help you out with that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, Red Jewel, Red Splendor, and some others as well. Good luck with that, Jeremy. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Cynthia in Plover emailed us to say she's not a good gardener, but absolutely loves peonies. She moved to a new home last spring and would like to plant peonies on her half-acre lot. How should she start? When should she plant? Where should she get them from? And what type should she get?
Oh, my goodness. one thing, it's a great plant for somebody who says they're not a good gardener, because once you get it in the ground, you get it in at the right height, make sure it has some sun and water at the first year, there's really not much can go wrong. Peonies like from anywhere from a half day of sun to full sun, and you have to dig a nice good-sized hole for the roots. They're generally planted as a dormant root. So it's a little unusual. Instead of seeds or an actual growing plant, a lot of times you actually buy the roots mail order, because a lot of garden centers don't carry them, or they might just carry a few. And if you want to get a good different varieties of peonies, I think probably planting roots in the late summer, early fall, usually September, August, September, October time frame, is the way you can get the most variety. You certainly can go to a garden center in the spring, and there's a lot of good peonies out there, but you will be limited in terms of how many varieties are available. So if you really want to get a collection going, people usually shop the internet for peonies if they're trying to get a lot of good varieties. One type of peony that I am totally in love with and I think is changing the way people are looking at peonies is something called an intersectional hybrid peony, also sometimes called an Ito, I-T-H-O peony. And they were first bred in the 50s, but as it turns out, one of the greatest breeders of intersectional hybrid peonies, there's probably only about four or five intersectional hybrid breeders going these days, is Roger Anderson, who is a retired machinist. He's no longer gardening much, but out of Fort Atkinson. And he introduced what I consider the single finest peony ever grown. It's called Bartzella. What makes these intersectional hybrids so wonderful is they combine the regular growth of the kind of peonies that most people think of grandma's backyard peonies, something that comes up in the spring, flowers, and then dies to the ground in the fall. It's perennial. Actually, and Intersectional peony has a parent of one of those kind of peonies, just a straight herbaceous peony, and the other parent is a tree peony, an actual woody shrub.
Hmm.
So what happens is you get a peony. The reason it's so wonderful is you get the colors and the flower forms from tree peonies, so we get apricots and yellows and unusual pinks and mauve colors you don't see in other peonies, and that's what makes Bartzella so wonderful. It's brilliant yellow, fully double. I've counted as many 50 flowers on a single plant. Huge flowers. And we can thank Mr. Roger Anderson for growing this plant. Now, for years, they were horribly expensive. You had to buy a mail order. But in the past couple of years, Monrovia is a large national retailer of plants, has been selling these Ito or intersectional hybrids, including Bartzella. And the price has really come down. So if you're interested in some peonies, I would be very seriously looking at maybe some of those intersectional hybrid peonies.
And Bartzella, is it spelled B-A-R-Z-E-L-L-A?
Yes. I believe Roger told me that Pastor Bartzella married him and his wife, and it's spelled B-A-R-T-Z-E-L-L-A.
Oh.
Nothing to do with the Simpsons, I'm pretty sure.
What a great story behind the name. I love that. Oh, Bartzella peony. Let's take another call here. Michelle in Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Larry.
What's on your mind today?
I have a question about a viburnum.
Okay.
Can I do the same thing with a viburnum that I can do with a lilac and cutting that down to the ground and having it come back?
Typically, yes. The viburnum's a huge family of plants. There's probably about 20 different species of viburnums that are used in landscaping. So some flower on new wood of the year, some flower on last year's wood. But in general, yes, you can typically. It depends on the case. If the plant is already fairly healthy and it's just way too big, rejuvenation commonly works quite well.
There you go, Michelle. Good luck. Appreciate the call.
Hey, one thing, Larry, I'd like to bring up about viburnums. We're part of a national plant sentinel. It's called Plant Sentinel Network through the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we try to scout for new plant pests. We were not the ones to discover it, but one plant pest that we're really keeping an eye open for these days is called, I believe it's called the viburnum beetle or viburnum leaf beetle.
Yeah.
I might even have that name wrong, but I know they've got it in Milwaukee County because I saw it last fall on the viburnums here in the garden.
No.
So it's something for us to be looking out for. It typically attacks, the one that it attacks that we're most familiar with out here would be arrowwood viburnums, and it's a little black beetle that chews thousands of little tiny holes, little turns the leaves into doilies, I guess.
Yeah.
Lots of little holes. Does not really hurt the plant horribly, but it's not very good to the eye.
Yeah.
So it's something we certainly have to watch out for, and people should be keeping their eyes open for viburnum leaf beetle.
Michelle, thanks again. Let's go to Rory in Rice Lake now. Hi, Rory.
A couple of questions on rose bushes. And one of them is, when is the best time to trim them, and how should they be trimmed?
It depends on the rose you're talking about. A lot of these newer shrub roses are, you know, you can cut back hard if you want to, like I say, literally all the way to the ground. But generally speaking, we don't do it that way. When we trim roses here, we do it very first thing in the spring before you start seeing the buds start unfurling, you know, when they're still dormant. And so it's still pretty cold weather, probably March time frame is when we do them out here. And we take out all the thinnest canes. Reduce what was left of the rose bush to a framework of the larger, thickest canes, and we typically will cut back to a bud site, where we see a bud, a live bud. And I like to cut at an angle and have that bud facing out if possible, but it doesn't always work that way. So you play with the bush, it talks to you and tells you where to make the cuts. When you're done, you want to have a nice framework of the thickest stems.
Rory, what kind do you have, by the way?
Well, my wife she's the guru when it comes to rosebush, and she does a great job growing them. It's just this year she let them grow, but we didn't trim them back. So I was just kind of curious how that works.
Yeah, there you go.
Anytime during the winter, if you feel up to it, you can get out there if you want to battle the elements. But this is from now until the first buds start growing is the best time to prune.
Thank you very much for that call. Let's go to Abby in Racine next. Hi, Abby.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about, I have a spirea hedge. I moved into the house 3 years ago, and I cut down one of them right down to the ground. So I know they come back. But the shape of the spirea when it blooms as a waterfall is lovely. And I want to try to keep that shape. And so I wanted to know if I could cut down the entire hedge every 3 years without harming the plant's growth.
Excuse me, the flowers on this plant, are they very tiny and white and they come out?
They come out
all along the branches, and it's fairly early in the season.
It's a little clusters of flowers. They're like umbrellas. Little umbrellas of flowers.
And they grow all along the stems, and the stems sort of arch out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that is what we call bridal wreath spirea, and that is something that, yes, could be handled in that way. And it might be growing pains that first year after you cut it back hard, but I understand what you're trying to do, get that thing to arch over and have that beautiful, beautiful form.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is doable. Like I say, you'd have growing pains for the first year, maybe. After cutting it back hard. But, yeah, I think you could do that successfully over and over again.
There you go, Abby. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Joan in Viroqua, your turn.
Hello. I have some peonies that are several years old, and they never seem to grow. They never bloom, and I'm just wondering if I should just take them out.
Well, the first thing I think about is, do they have enough sun? Do you think they get at least a half day of sun?
Yes.
Okay, so you can eliminate that. Then the next thing I think about when peonies don't bloom for me is I wonder if they got planted too deep or sometimes too shallow. Generally speaking, when peony roots should be planted between an inch and 2 inches, the buds should be about an inch or 2 inches below the ground. It's possible they got planted too deep. A third possibility, not as common, but if you fertilize with a lot of lawn fertilizer, high nitrogen fertilizer, sometimes that gets a lot of green leaves at the expense of flowers. That's the three things that I can think of that might be hampering you. And it's not the sun, so it might be planting depth. And do the plants themselves look okay? Do they actually, the leaves look pretty good?
Not really.
Oh, yeah. I'm wondering if planting depth is your problem. They're just planted too deep or something, that they're just not adjusting. Yeah. I'm not quite sure,
That could be.
Yeah.
We'll have to, do you have any comments, Joan, on the depth of planting? No, we guess we may have lost her. That's okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not sure.
Inches.
It's now the thing is, even if the depth was wrong, the plant will readjust itself over time. So I wouldn't think about. I'd either give them another year to see if they come along, or maybe it's just time to start with something else.
Yeah, could be. Joan, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Dave Wenninger, who is the horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens. Having a lot of fun with him. Hope you're having a good time, too. If you have a question or a comment, join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, David Wenninger. Dave is horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Garden in Milwaukee County. Wonderful to have him with us. And we will take some more calls here. Kita in Phelps is up next. Hi, Keita. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a flowering almond, those pink ones. I think maybe Japanese flowering almond. I don't know. They were planted on the property before we bought it, and two of them planted underneath a river birch, which has now gotten very big, and they've gotten kind of leggy and not blooming very much. Should I move them or just cut them down so they'll grow back? But I'd like to get them to bloom again.
Yeah. Members of the cherry, a pink flowering almond, members of the cherry family, it needs sun to bloom, and so that's your biggest problem. So I think, yes, I think it would be possible to transplant. I don't know how big it is, and, you know, I don't know your you know, any physical limitations or whatever, but it, if they're diggable, yes, if you could dig them out, the time to do it would be very early spring before they break bud. But, yes, you certainly could replant them. That is your problem. They're just not getting enough sun. And they're getting, you know, maybe as they get old. That is not a plant that always forms up beautifully on its own, so sometime a little ornamental pruning is in order with a pink flowering almond. But I'm sure that's your problem, is lack of sun.
There we go. Thanks, Keita, for calling. And Jackie in Superior, your turn. Hi.
Hi there. I have a question on pruning the old-fashioned Annabelle hydrangeas. I believe your guest last week said you can prune them down to 2 inches, but I'm a little leery of doing that. I have, they grow, they're real leggy. They grow about 5 feet tall, but they have just beautiful dinner plate-sized blooms on them.
Mm.
Is it too late in the year to be pruning them down to 2 inches? I normally trim them down to a foot.
I think that 2-inch number is right on the head. I think they by cutting them down to 2 inches, you eliminate the look of having that the bristly stem sticking up. They come right from the ground every year, so you can cut them down to a foot. You can cut them down to 2 inches; they'll come back pretty much similar, you know, in similar ways both ways. But I like cutting them down hard.
I do too. But you could do a little of experimenting there. Cut a few down, you know, cut a few to 2 inches and a few to a foot and see.
And, you know, the platform might be a little different because they branch out then from a foot up as opposed to right at the ground. It might be interesting just to see what happens and see what you like better.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the plant will survive either way.
Okay. Good luck, Jackie. Thank you for calling. Mary Ann in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi.
I wanted to tell the story of when my mother was housebound, and this was years ago. I would come down and take her for a ride, and the one place she always wanted to go was the botanical gardens, because she had always gone there when she could see well and travel. And so that was a comfort to her in her old age, and I think people should realize what beautiful gardens they are.
Oh, thank you, Mary Ann, for calling. You're not going to disagree on that, are you, Dave?
No, I tell you, the Berner Botanical Gardens have a special place in so many people's hearts, including myself. I grew up on the south side of Milwaukee, grew up around 76 in Oklahoma, and as a kid, I can remember coming here and rolling down that hill by the roses. I still remember that. Remember coming for eating breakfast cooked on a Coleman stove in the gardens here. So I know the gardens are very close to my heart. And so many of us here the same way.
Yeah.
You know, talk a little bit about one reason the gardens are great is the outside people who care about the gardens. We could not possibly keep the gardens looking as good as we could without the help of volunteers. Both volunteers through the Friends of Berner Botanical Gardens, who are our sister association, does education at the gardens and programs at the gardens, but then also in-garden volunteers. And one other kind of garden volunteer that has been wonderful for us are all the wonderful Wisconsin plant breeders and plant growers who've donated plants and gotten plants into our trial gardens. So many of those people. People like... Robert Griesbach with hybrid lilies, and Roger Anderson, I talked about those intersectional hybrid peonies. Brent Horvath from Intrinsic Perennials down in Harvard, Illinois. Nate Bremer from Solaris Peonies. Chuck Finke, he's a hosta breeder. People like that giving us plants to trial to put in the gardens. If you got a second, I got a little story about Dennis Litvina.
Good. Okay. Go right ahead.
Dennis Litvina was a friend of mine and happened to be a great hybridizer, or breeder, I'm not hybridizer, well, hybridizer as well, breeder of magnolias. He was a retired school teacher, I believe, lived in Green Bay. And he had donated many magnolias over the years to the gardens here. We talked about getting a few more of his plants in the gardens, and we couldn't put something together. And then finally, we put something together all of a sudden where he called and he said, oh, come on up. Bring a truck up here. You got to have it this day. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to get my 10 magnolias. We sent a truck up there. It came down creaking, and the springs were creaking. We had 55 magnolias in the back.
Oh.
And I couldn't believe it. It's like, what? What do we do to deserve? And some of this stuff you just cannot find on the market. Some were unique and original breeding work. And so we got 55 great magnolias planted. And then I heard 3 days later, Mr. Litvina passed away. So what he'd been trying to do, why we couldn't put anything together, I'm sure he was sick and he just couldn't get stuff done. But the one thing he wanted to make sure to do is to get his plants out to a place where the public could enjoy them.
Oh, man.
What a wonderful, wonderful thing. And by the way, the magnolia collection up at Green Bay Botanic is incredible.
It is. Of
Dennis Litvina. So it's people like that, just regular people who happen to have a love of plants, who breed plants, and they work through us to get them to the general public. It's just such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and a great story. Let's take Pat in Green Bay next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a problem with a privet hedge that my husband and I put in between our yard and our neighbor's yard. And that was about 30-plus years ago. And the privet hedge can get up to maybe 5 to 6 feet high, and I kind of try to keep it trimmed. But the last couple of years, box elders keep coming in to between the privet hedge and kind of dominating my division of my lot from my neighbor's yard. It's kind of like I have to cut them down to the ground, and they keep coming back up.
Yeah, so do you want to get rid of just the box elders, or do you want to get rid of the whole thing?
I want to keep the privet hedge the way we put it in many years ago, but this box elder seems to be kind of making the hedge move over for it. So what I want to do is cut it off before it. So I wanted to know, what should I do? Keep asking my kids to cut it off right at the ground level, or is there another way to get rid of them from keeping showing up?
Once it's been established in the ground and has a nice big root system, it's sort of tough to deal with because it's not very diggable out. And I'd say trimming it back on a regular basis is it's hard to deal with a herbicide that would try to kill that because you're in with the other plants. So I think just trimming it back at ground level Larry, do you have any good ideas there?
Yeah, if you keep trimming it back, you're going to hopefully eventually starve the plant. The only other way is probably a direct application using a sponge or something of an herbicide that could kill it.
Roundup would might work on that. You, like you said, direct application of a concentrated form using a sponge, although absolutely make sure that it corresponds to the directions on the label before you do anything like that.
Yeah, but
if you want to stay safe, you want to stay legal.
Yeah, and if you don't want to do that, if you keep cutting it back, and even as it sprouts up during the season, you know, it's going to sprout, just cut those sprouts out. Whenever you see them, you're going to eventually kill the plant, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, and like you said, Larry, the important part is keeping up on it. Don't let those sprouts get too big.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So there you go, Pat. Thank you so much for calling. We have, I'm going to ask you, there are a couple of things coming up. What are some activities coming up at Berner?
Well, you know, the Friends of Berner Botanical Gardens does some very nice programs here. One of my favorite ones, they started up, I think, a year or 2 years ago. It's called Berner Brewtanicals. And on Thursday nights, we'll get a local brewer in there, and then they'll bring their beer to taste, talk about the processes. And just coming up, this coming month, the 17th of January, oh, my gosh, 17th is now. It's past. Anyway, yes. So we've got Component Brewing is coming. Company Brewing is coming the 7th of February. In March, we've got Broken Bat Brewery coming. And so it's a nice time, nice way to meet the brewer and taste the beer. We've got Winterfest coming out just this weekend. This Sunday out at Winterfest, you can cure your cabin fever with outdoor nature walks. We'll have indoor activities for kids. The nature walk, they're going to charge $5, but otherwise it's free. Please bring some canned food for Hunger Task Force. And so we're looking for people to come out there. February 8th, we've got a winter, an evening winter walk. Just recently, the Friends of Bernard Botanical Gardens, working with us and working with working with a lighting person, we're in the process of having. Well, actually, it's basically in now. LED lighting, so we'll be able to do night walks.
Night walks. I tell you what, that sounds like fun. Dave Wanninger, our guest. He is the horticulturist in charge at the Bernard Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we visit with David Wanninger, horticulturist in charge at the Bernard Botanical Gardens. What questions do you have for Dave about the gardens or your plants? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dave, we got an email from Joni in Muskego. You had mentioned earlier that you don't mow your front lawn because you've got plants, all kinds of plants in the front lawn that don't need mowing. Joni wonders, what the heck plants do you have in your yard that you don't have to mow?
Well, when you introduced me, you said I love hostas, peonies, and dwarf conifers. And I'd say that's probably about 75% right there, those three kinds of plants. But part of the fun of gardening with hostas, I've got enough shade to do hostas in both my front and my backyard, is getting combination plants that grow really well with them. So things like Japanese forest grass and some of the heucheras, hellebores, Lenten roses, that's another kind of plant. And once you get things like hostas and hellebores, these Japanese forest grass, once they grow together, they pretty much shade out the weeds. And so starting out, you got to do quite a bit of weeding. But over time, things start filling in, and you can pretty much have, it's not quite a turf, but it's a solid mass of different trees, shrubs, and perennials.
It sounds wonderful, actually. You know, just a related email here, Joan emailed to ask how you keep slugs off your hostas.
Couple different ways for that. One way would be to use ammonia, liquid ammonia, early in the spring, and you spray a 10% solution of ammonia directly on the ground, especially if you have the leaves raked up, and the slugs overwinter as eggs on debris and on soil surface, and that the ammonia will kill them. And it also will fertilize, if there's plenty of nitrogen to ammonia, so it also fertilizes your hostas. Another way, which is regarded as a slug bait, but it's regarded as an organic slug bait, is something called Sluggo. And it's little white pellets, you can buy at different retailers, that it's iron phosphate. So it's fairly safe. The trouble that it's a bait, some people are worried about cats and dogs eating it. I've looked into research on it. I really don't think that's much of a problem at all. So Sluggo, these little pellets you sprinkle on the ground probably every 3 weeks. If you get two or three or four applications down in the springtime, the slugs just don't build up a population at all. A third way would be, there's another chemical called metylaldehyde, which is a blue little pellets, and those are not organic. They have a little longer-term residual effect in terms of you don't have to put them down as often. So they might be a little more efficient than Sluggo, but metaldehyde, the trade name for that is MetaRex. All three of those products work quite well for keeping slugs down.
Call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. John emailed that every year he plants 10 to 15 new plants in his garden, but the next year most don't come back. Over the years, he's planted about 100 small flowers at this point. Most of them are gone. And he's trying to figure out what the heck's the problem. And, in fact, plants that were doing great for several years have disappeared.
Well, Johnny, I always said that the more plants you kill, the better gardener you become. So you must be turning into some kind of gardener, my friend. But I'm not quite sure. You know, we don't really have the details of what kind of plants those are. So sometimes people are planting plants that, you know, just don't have the hardiness that we need, especially, you know, especially seeds, and expecting them to come up and stay here year to year, but not knowing exactly what went in. That's actually, Larry, one reason that something like a botanic garden is a wonderful place, because you can come out, you can talk to people at the gardens, and you can see what is growing well here. That's one reason the trial gardens are so wonderful here, because people wondering what is the best new variety of nasturtium or pansy or what have you, they can come and see them here in the gardens. But, yeah, as far as Johnny, knowing what went on with that stuff, I really hard for me to say.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there could, you know, maybe the neighbor's got a lawn service.
That has happened, Larry. But, again, working with other... networking with your neighbors, going to garden centers, talking to other gardeners. Actually, Master Gardeners is a wonderful resource for anybody. Most counties have a Master Gardener, a call-in line somewhere. And these people really know their stuff and can help you out on a local basis.
I love Master Gardeners. They're wonderful.
Hey, where do most of our garden volunteers come from? Thank you so much, Southeast Wisconsin Master Gardeners. Big shout out there.
Adam in Deerfield, we'll go to you now. Hi, Adam.
Hi. Thank you for your show. It's quite excellent. We've been enjoying it. I had a question regarding the slugs that you were just talking about. So this is more from a vegetable gardening standpoint, but we believe what has been slugs getting on our tomatoes and causing damage there, and I'm wondering if the ammonia or the Sluggo would be, well, Sluggo probably would work fine, but if the ammonia would also work well in that situation for, say, a raised bed with a lot of tomatoes.
Where the ammonia really works is at knocking down the previous year's population. The trouble with using ammonia is you can only use it that one time early in the spring before stuff comes up. You cannot spray it on the plants once they're up out of the ground, because it can burn. It can burn foliage. So the ammonia might be enough, though. Just doing that one application, you've really knocked down your slug numbers. But if you want to be more, I think it might be useful to use that Sluggo,
Yeah.
So either one, but Sluggo, you could put it on a couple times during the year.
Yeah, there you go, Adam. Thank you so much for, or maybe do both. I guess you
or could. And again, I love the idea of using something like ammonia. That's organic gardening. It takes you back to those Jerry Baker days where he talked about putting beer and soap and stuff together. I don't know if that stuff worked, but 10% ammonia is a good fertilizer and a good slug killer.
There you go, Adam. Thank you very much for calling. Connie in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there.
Hi, and thanks. I'm interested in planting something that I think is called Camassiparis obtusa nanogracilis. I think it's called a false cypress. It looks very Japanese to me, and I'm very fond of this plant. But where I want to put it is in the north, on an exposed spot that faces north and east, sort of a northeast corner. Am I doomed?
Where do you live?
Right in the center of Madison on the isthmus.
Okay, so yes. I have a 25-year-old Kosteri a cultivar called Castori, very closely related to what you're talking about, and I've moved it three times, and it's always lived for me. However, I have also killed that plant, that species of plant, several times in the years. They're a little touchy for around here, but I'd say a northeast location in the middle of town, I'd say that's a good location. To be honest, a northeast location is fairly sheltered because you don't have the problems of winter sun on it, and it actually shelters from a lot of the worst winds, which tend to be west and southwest. So I think that's a great location, to be honest.
There you go.
Keep in mind, you do want to try to give it about a half day of sun, so if it's under the shade of a big plant that might, you know, not in being northeast, you might have to worry about how much sun. But in general, go for it, lady. Go for it. It sounds like a great plant.
All right, Connie. Thank you. On to Alexis in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I am calling in regard to the lady who had asked about the box elder that was crowding out her privet hedge.
Yeah.
It seems to me a couple of years ago that I had a similar problem and cut them down to the ground and put black plastic over them. Two seasons and they were gone. They were dead. And I'm just wondering if I don't even remember what it was that was coming up there between my hedge. But yeah. that's what I did. So I just wondered, I just thought I'd offer that.
Yeah. Well, that makes some sense, doesn't it, Dave?
It sure does. The principle sounds right on. And, you know, you can use some of those same principles. The woman, going back to that woman who talked about doing a prairie in her front yard, I have heard of people establishing, getting their soil prepped for prairies by doing exactly the same type of thing that we're talking about here, using either something like newspapers, many, many thicknesses of newspapers, or black plastic over the ground to actually sort of solarize the soil, to heat up that soil and prevent, you know, to choke off the weeds. So I think there's a possibility there. That might work.
Yeah, thanks, Alexis. Appreciate it. And Mike in Warrens, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. What actually works, and it's recommended by the Forestry Service of Wisconsin for blackthorn and things of this, where we do woodlot habitat improvements, you
uh-huh.
cut it off, and there's a chemical they got that they want you to put on top of the stump, kill them dead. Very simple. Put it on with a paintbrush. You can get it at any farm store. We use it all the time.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I might tell you the name, but I can't remember. The question I got, though, is they always write up this Pewaukee apple in the Milwaukee Journal. Can't find it. I'd like one of them and a Boston crab. Where would I find a Boston crab apple?
So the Pewaukee apple and a Boston crab.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with either of those. You said it was in the journal recently. I'm not familiar with either of those particular plants.
Man.
Larry, have you heard them?
Pewaukee, no.
Yeah.
I haven't, as a matter of fact. You might have to call the newspaper and ask the, or look up who wrote the story.
Another, especially that apple, there's a lot of local orchards that, you know, sort of specialize in some of these local apples. And a place like maybe a Patterson's Orchard in Hales Corner, in Milwaukee area, might either be growing it or know about it. So maybe call a local orchard on that.
Yeah, that's certainly worth a look anyway, Mike. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And other callers online at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Always love to hear from you. A number of people have called in with suggestions on slugs. Diatomaceous earth is one of the suggestions. Coffee grounds is another. And Dave, have you had experience with those?
I have had experience with both, and I think if you could, I don't think coffee grounds to actually work, although it's actually nice compost.
Yeah.
But if you could spread the diatomaceous earth on a pane of glass and then train your slugs to crawl across that, it might work. But I think the way soils are, no, it does not work. We have tried it.
Jeremy in Green Bay has a comment for us. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey,
So my comment is back toward a caller that was on a few minutes ago with the perennials that he keeps planting, and they keep dying. I have a unproven theory that if you succumb to the cheaper prices from big box stores, that those perennials may be over-fertilized and experience some kind of shock and just seem to always have a lower rate of success.
Yeah. So there you go.
That's been my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I have seen some of that, especially some of the big box stuff. You'll get in like a Huker, and it's like twice as big as the same plant would be if you'd get it from a local grower. And the root systems are maybe a little bit big for the pot. And the plant can still recover and grow well, but I've actually lost some because they're hard to keep watered. They're just so big. They're like 2 months, 3 months ahead of the growing season here. And so it's trying to grow it with, August roots, and it's only getting June or May water. I think that's part of the problem sometimes.
There you go.
I don't always buy the biggest plant in the pot, let's say, when I'm looking for perennials.
There you go. We have Dale in Chippewa Falls up next. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, appreciate it.
Good. Hey, talking about your slug cures, and this has really worked well for me, and I think I might have heard it on your show, Larry, from somebody, and it's obviously beer, and I tried it first mainly on hostas. I had hostas, and I believe the other one is Ligularia, that were just literally getting eaten like crazy by the slugs, big holes in all the leaves, and I see them there, and the problem with beer, if you put it in a pan or something, you know, you water the plant or it rains, gets diluted. And what you do is you take the beer bottle and a bottle of beer is what I've always used, enough that you pour out enough, or if you have to drink it, you lay the bottle horizontally on its side so there's enough beer that doesn't leak out. And honest to God, you can pick it up 4 or 5 days later and that thing will have, in my yard anyway, a half a dozen slugs. And I've done that for the past 2-3 years, and it's gotten to the point where they're almost, you know, gone. I almost don't have any problem at all anymore. So that's what I use, and it works really good. I'm assuming it will work with tomatoes too.
Do you set the bottle, kind of insert it kind of on its side into the ground a little bit so they can get through the neck, or do they just climb
right,
up?
Right, right.
Yeah.
You lay the bottle horizontally. Like, say, you pour enough beer out so you can lay it maybe tipped up a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. I lay it right under the hosta, or, like, say, I have, is it Ligularia? It's a great big leaf plant, kind of shade plant. And I lay it right under the plants. And the cool thing with hostas of them, the big ones, once they're growing, you don't even see the bottle laying there. So it's laying horizontally, you know, and maybe there's only a few ounces of beer left in it. But they climb in there. And honestly, just try it once. You come back, you pour that bottle out a week later, and there'll be 5-6 slugs come out with the beer, rest of the stale beer. It's just really something.
Well,
and like
that,
yeah, I think I...
Because what I always hated about the beer thing for hostas is, yeah, those pie plates, it's just a pain in the rear end to
right,
be
right.
Pulling the pie plates and refilling, and you got a pie plate full of dead slugs, and ugh. But I like that. I could see how that beer bottle, with you angling the bottle in there and letting them crawl in, I could see that working.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like say, good news is you have to drink the beer first. You don't want to waste it. And I don't know if it would work with a can. I've never tried it with a can. The thing I heard was bottle. I've always used a bottle. So.
Oh, thank you, Dale. That's one I had not heard. And I've heard a lot of things here on this Garden
you
Talk.
You have.
Garden Talk. That's one I hadn't heard. And I haven't had a slug problem in a while, but I've got a lot of hostas. So if... but I always have a bottle of beer handy in the refrigerator, so it may be something that I will try this year if I get a slug problem. Oh, my goodness. Well, somebody was wondering how often, this back to your garden,
sure.
The burner garden, how often do you change displays, or what displays are changed on a yearly basis?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, wonderful question. Well, we try to have a big big display of spring bulbs, particularly tulips. Every year we try to set that up to work, so we coordinate it with Mother's Day, of course. With weather as it is, it's always a challenge to try to get your tulips to time to the weekend you want them to. But we do probably 15,000 to 20,000 tulips every year here. And so then shortly after, so that's a beautiful display for the Mother's Day time period. And then shortly after that, all of those tulip bulbs, or yeah, most all those tulip bulbs get pulled, and we start our displays for our annual garden display. The annual garden, or the walled garden sometimes, it's called, is our single largest planting area for annual beds. So that really shows well starting, oh gosh, you know, the annuals go in, and by probably about the middle of June, they're really looking great. And middle of June is also the time that the roses are doing their first big, big blooming. So that's a great time of the year to be out there. You know, the peonies right around June 1st are always a great, great show. So, but mostly the seasonal changes for us is our spring tulip garden to the annual garden, in both the annual flowers in the annual garden, and then also around the visitor center. So I think that's probably the big changes that we have, you know, in terms of the seasonal changes that we have. We switch out a lot. We do a lot of containers, and we switch out containers pretty much continually as the season goes around, you know.
Yeah.
What's in bloom? You got your pansies, you got your summer stuff, you got your beautiful fall harvest displays going into something Christmassy and then something wintry.
Jill was wondering if or what would listeners be surprised to learn about the gardens?
Oh, goodness. One is, I bet you most people don't realize that there are pecans, actual pecan trees, growing in Milwaukee County, and those pecans are actually edible. Not like we get a lot of them, and that they're not very large, but boy, are they delicious. We've got a nut tree collection here in the gardens that was pretty much unknown. We got it remapped a couple years ago and accession tags on the trees so we can identify the trees. But we've got several pecan trees, and there are also these hybrid hickories called hickans, which is a cross between a hickory and pecan. And they're quite delicious, and they don't exist anywhere else. So...
Oh, that would be.
Not supposed to pick anything in the gardens, but it's totally legal to pick something off the ground. So if there's a hickory nut down there or a pecan down there, I'm likely collect it and eat it. One other thing that people could look forward to in the gardens, it's a totally different subject, is we do a great series of concerts every year. Mr. Wimmer, a local developer, is. Sponsors a series of concerts. So 10 concerts a year, they're totally free. They're attended very, very well, and it's just a great, great scene to have beautiful music and kids dancing in the grass.
Oh.
People having fun on a summer night.
I tell you what, this has been a lot of fun. Dave, will you be back and be with us again sometime?
I would love to.
Dave Weniger, what a great guy and what a great guest. He is horticulturist in charge of the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. We'll get him back, and we will talk with him again. A lot of fun visiting with him. He's got a lot of energy, doesn't he? That's wonderful. Monday at this time, our tech specialist, Jesse LeGru, will be back with us to talk about the latest generation of cellular communications, 5G. So I hope you can join us at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, hey, thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.